Okay, welcome to tonight's conference. This is Dee Sweeney, and Linda Fidel is going to be the person who's facilitating the conference. And what I'm going to do is put the call into a presenter mode, which means that it automatically mutes everyone on the call, and that will be with the exception of the mentors. So, mentors, you need to pay attention to background noise that you might be creating. And then after Linda has done her magic, we will open the call up for questions and answers, and I'll take folks off of mute at that point for the Q&A.
Thank you.
Linda is going to be talking about tools for memorization tonight. And I think you're going to find it really useful. She is one of those folks like me who didn't come out of the womb with those memorization genes in place. And lecture and presenting is, you know, a lot of her own experience and things that she did that made a difference and worked in that process. So I'm going to go ahead and put everybody on mute. Make sure I don't disconnect us all here. Okay, Linda, we're ready.
Okay, thanks, Dee. Welcome, everybody. And as you said, tonight I'm going to share just a little bit about my background with my heart journey and some experiences I had in memorization. Also, I am going to present you with three major tools that I found have been really most effective for me. But I want you to know that there will be expanded notes with additional tools for memorization on the website once the conference call recording is posted. Those expanded notes will be available for you to print out. So some of you may play an instrument other than the harp, maybe you do strictly voice, but I think most of these tools will apply to most everybody. So I think it probably goes without saying that most of you probably realize the benefits of memorizing your tunes, meaning you don't have any books or papers that you're dragging along, you don't have to have a music stand, and the music doesn't fall off of the music stand if someone breathes through the room. But most importantly, it allows you to focus on the patient and adjust your music as needed. Those of you that have not begun your internship yet, haven't had the privilege of bedside experience, those of you in level one, but you will soon realize the great importance of memorizing your music, because as you're watching that patient and adjusting your music accordingly, and believe me, you will learn to do that it does come. And so it will aid you in helping to create a relaxing and healing environment for that patient. Plus, I personally believe that memorizing your music brings a beautiful energy to the music. The intention just seems to shine through more when you've got it memorized and not having to pay attention to that written page. So let me give you a little bit of background. I began my adventure with the harp in 2006, about 6.5 years ago. I didn't have any formal musical training. I didn't grow up playing the piano or any instrument. I had a difficult time reading notation unless it was strictly the treble clef. No ledger lines above or below the treble clef. Oh, I couldn't even begin to fathom what the bass clef read like. And so when I began our certification program and read that memorizing was a good thing, I was pretty dubious about my ability to memorize even one song, let alone have 5 or 10 in a repertoire. So it was a huge puzzle to me, and it felt like a mountain to climb. And if any of you have read Soprano on Her Head, the author talks about your inner judges, and let me tell you, mine were feeding me all kinds of negative messages. Like, you've never been good at this, it's impossible to learn so many songs, and so on. So you can just plug in your own little negative messages there, if you have them. I was really frustrated, but I was quite determined that I knew the value in doing the memorizing. And so that led me to look for a better way on working on memorization. So my search gave me a few new methods to try, and I started feeling just a little bit of improvement, and I felt a little more encouraged. And then in 2009, Dee did an inspiring conference call on memorization. And like most of us, I wanted to do this right away. I mean, I wanted it done yesterday, not just today. I wanted to be able to do it quickly. And it wasn't coming quickly, especially the way I was doing it. But now that I'm on the other side of all those negative thoughts, and I see that I really can do this, and I finally came to the realization that good memory skills develop over time, gradually. They're not, they don't evolve from wishful thinking. As Dee said, it's not great genetics. You aren't necessarily born with this, skill, but it doesn't involve incredible intellect. It just develops over time. So I will tell you that it will get stronger as you practice. It's kind of like exercising your muscles. You know, when you use those weights or those elastic bands to help you stretch or whatever. It's just like doing that. But the point is, you just have to do it. So, as the brief description said, we each have different styles of learning. We learn visually from the printed page or notation, or watching our hands on the strings of the guitar or the harp, or on the piano. We learn visually from the printed page of notation, or watching your hands on the strings. The auditory is listening. You listen to that soundtrack. Then there's the kinesthetic. That repeated motion, that action, the feel of your hands on the strings of the piano, on the strings of the guitar or the harp or on the keys of the piano. So all three of those, utilizing more than one of those styles is always more beneficial. In O'Connor's book, Not Pulling Strings, if any of you have read that, it is on our reading list, he states that the more senses that are involved in the learning process, the more likely something is going to be remembered. And I can attest to that. If you have the written page and you have visually your hands on the strings, and then you can hear that melody going, and then you can feel your hands touching whatever instrument it is you're playing, it all pulls together, and you will learn so much faster when you employ all of those. And don't just think of yourself as only a visual learner or only an auditory learner. So the inspiration that I got from a lot of these tools, what I'm calling tools for your toolbox, came from books, it came from online resources, and it also came from skilled professionals like Dee, Lori Riley. A few I've kind of discovered and worked on with my own repertoire, and one of them is probably going to sound a little unusual as a tool, but I'm going to present that to you first. But I want you to know, hopefully you will find one or two here that'll work for you. If you try out one of these and after a fashion you find that it doesn't work, just move on. Grab another tool and get started. That's really what we need to do. So, here's my three favorite tools, and these will all be included in the extended notes, okay? This is the one that I spoke of that I think some people will go, what? When I say this, my first tool is time of day. And I know it sounds strange, but here's what I discovered. We all know we have that best time of day when we're most alert, we're most creative. You know, you say, oh, I'm a morning person, or I am not a morning person at all, I'm a night person. I come alive after 6 o'clock at night. So whatever time of day is your best time, that's when we need to work on committing attuned to memory. I used to think of my playing my heart as a reward for getting all my household chores done. Everything was neat and tidy. I didn't have anything else to do. I could sit down and really enjoy my time. But by the time I got to that, I was just tired, and I wasn't able to really truly give it my total concentration and focus. So that's tool number one. Tool number two is analyze and strategize. So this is kind of a combination of little mini tools. First, I like to make a copy of the original, if you're working off of notation, of course. So then you have your original, but you can mark up your copy however you want. Spend a few moments in discovery. Notice the key. What key is it in? What's the highest note? What's the lowest note? What kind of a feel does this piece have? Is it a waltz? Is it very romantic? Is it a jig? Is it a lullaby? How is it you feel that tune? And then play through the right hand just to get the melody in your head. And, of course, specifically if this is an unfamiliar tune. So while you're doing that, you'll also want to notice, what's the timing? Is it 3-4 or 4-4? What key signature is it in? Does it have sharps or flats? What kind of chords does it have? Are they notated as chords above the line, or are they just given in the bass clef as chords? Or single notes? Perhaps there is a particular chord pattern that's developed there. It's a 1-5-8. Or 1-3-5, or 1-5-8-2-3. Notice all those things. This is just discovery time. So this just has to do with the right hand. Then what you're going to do is you're going to look at the left hand, and you're going to really concentrate on those chords or patterns, or maybe it's just single notes. Maybe it's blocked chords. Maybe it's a rolled chord. Discover what kind of things are going to be going on the left hand. So now this doesn't mean that you're able to play through this well or without mistakes or even play through it at all. This is just a discovery time. So just familiarize yourself with the melody and recognize what the left hand is sort of doing. Then mark the fingering, most important, and the bracketing, where you have your placing patterns. And it will, if someone has a question about that at the end, we'll address that if you don't understand what bracketing or placing patterns are. Dee has mentioned this before in her previous call regarding memorization, that marking your fingering is extremely important. Lori Riley suggests it's critical for muscle memory. And you'll see why as we go along with what I'm going to discuss with the tools. So be consistent with your fingering, especially for repeating patterns. Always play the same fingering and play it correctly and very slowly. This is not up to tempo by any means. But if you play it correctly and slowly every time, it will become embedded in your muscle memory. So always be aware that even if the fingering is notated on your printed page, or if you've noted it with your own fingering, remember those are just suggestions. If it doesn't work for you, just change it. Make it comfortable for you. If your fingers don't work in the particular pattern, then adjust it. That muscle memory is such a real experience. I was amazed at how very realistic it was once I finally got it. I did something marking the ledger notes, the notes that are on the ledger lines above and below, you know, the staff. I was particularly challenged with that. And so I marked all the red notes, the C notes with a red pencil, and all the F notes with a blue pencil. Just kind of, it helps the brain connect. And the brain looks colored. So why not use that to our advantage? And use the highlighters if you need to be alerted to particular parts of the song. Maybe one particular measure has given you a little bit of trouble and you want to kind of make yourself very alert when you're playing that one. Or maybe a particular chord that maybe you keep missing. Mark that one quite clearly. Always look for the repeating patterns in either or both hands. Repeats are your friend, because once you learn it, and then you, in one part, when you get to another part, you'll recognize, oh, I've already learned that. So I don't have to worry about that. I've already got that down. So then you can go on to something else that requires new attention. Okay, my third tool is called chunking, and Dee has talked about this many, many times, but I'm going to combine chunking with something else that she's mentioned, and that's called review and new and review. And this all has to do with how our brains receive the information that we're trying to kind of force feed it, actually. It didn't come as easy to me. Chunking did not come easy to me. I had a habit of just playing through whole lines of music, or maybe I just take one line and I just keep playing through the whole line, wondering, you know, why am I not getting this? So I had really little or no success. And then I have a huge aha moment when Dee mentions how the brain likes to work with smaller chunks of information. Now, mine seems to work very nicely with about three chunks or measures. That's what I'm calling a chunk. It's a measure. Sometimes I will work up to about five measures. It just depends on where there's perhaps a complete phrase in the music. If it seems uncomfortable to chunk it up and into three chunks and then two little chunks, maybe I'll use all five of those, but not more than five. Then I read in the book, Not Pulling Strings, it's a great resource for this kind of a concept. He mentions this a lot in that book. So I take each hand separately. For, let's just say I'm working on three measures. I get the right hand doing what it's supposed to do, according to the fingering that's been laid out by either the composer or myself. Then I work on the left hand, just for those three chunks. Then I put the two hands together, and I play through them. I make sure that each one is doing what they're supposed to do. By this time, my eyes are more on the strings. I'm kind of visualizing this as I'm talking to you. My eyes are more on the strings and my fingers than they are on the notation. But I frequently check back with the printed page just to be sure. So if I need to adjust it, I can. If I've missed a spot, I can plug that in, because I want to practice it precisely the same way every single time, so that muscle memory kicks in. So then I check myself and I see if I can, let's say, play it through five times correctly. If I can, and this is very, very slowly, this is not at any means up to tempo. So if I can't play it five times correctly without mistakes, then I go back and I see where I'm stumbling, and still working very slowly. Now, what I've been doing is combining all the senses. If you've kind of, you know, probably sensed that already, I'm hearing the notes, the tune. I'm looking at the notation. I'm looking at my, watching my hands and the strings. And I'm feeling my fingers move from string to string according to the fingering pattern I've written down. So I've got all those senses going there. So this is going to help with your muscle memory. Now, the next challenge is to go on to the next three or so measures. Let's just say I'm working on another three. That's my next chunk of three measures. And I repeat that whole process, breaking it down. Right hand first. Get the pattern down. Go to the left hand. Combine. Now, you've got, let's say you've got six measures all chunked. Now that you've worked on those, you're ready to combine those six measures. So first, before you do that, it's a good idea to work on the last chunk of that, the last measure of that first chunk. So you've got measures 1, 2, and 3. So you take measure 3 of the first group. Then you take measure 1 of the second group. Because that's where you're going to plug those together. And you want that transition to be smooth. So you want to work on that just a little bit before you work on all six of those measures or chunks. So don't rush. Work very, very slowly. I can't stress that enough. We're going to get it up to tempo later. So right now, this is what I would do. After I've worked on this much, I would take a little break. I get up, I stretch. Sometimes this is kind of stressful, so I do need a stretch. I walk away. I do something else. I hum the tune. I might go fold laundry. I might finish up those dishes that I didn't finish because I wanted to sit down and play instead of doing all my housework. I wanted to be alert and work at the very best time of day I could. I'm going to visualize what I just played. So I'm not necessarily zoning out on the tune. I'm still working on it in my head. So that when I come back to play, I start with what I've worked on, that first 3 to 6 measures or chunks, and I just review that much. So here comes the review, new review part of this particular tool. So I'm going to work on reviewing what I just did, those first 3 or 6 measures, however many chunks you decide to use. I'm going to review that. It makes you feel kind of good because, oh, I got it. So that's encouraging. Now you're going to go on and you're going to add something new, something to stimulate that brain into action again. And then you're going to review all of that. So review, new, and review. When you add the new, you're going through the same process that we did with the chunking. Right hand, left hand, putting them together. And then add it to the final group, or the first group, I should say. So it's kind of like a practice sandwich, if you want to look at it that way. You've got the review on the outside, piece of bread, you've got the new, the jam and jelly on the inside, and then you've got the review, the other side of the sandwich with the bread. So, or you can think about it this way. This is kind of like calisthenics for your brain. It kind of gets your brain up and going with the new, adding the new stuff in between the reviews. And I realize that this may sound just a little bit more complicated than it really is. To some, it might seem overwhelming, but if you take it just a little bit at a time and try to establish your own pattern of chunking, I know you can make it work because I'm here to tell you it really, really does work. So there you have it. There's 3 more tools for your memorization toolbox. There'll be many more listed on the website as expanded tools. Remember to choose your time of day to work on your memorization when you're fresh, when you're at your best. Work on analyzing and strategizing You approach the notation with an attitude of discovery. You want to find out what makes that tune tick, how it's written, what the key is, and all of those little important things that we need to know. And then how to get it under your fingers and into your brain. That's the analyzing and strategizing. And chunking with the review, new review, I like to say that you want to do like your mom used to tell you. You take small bites and you chew well. So that's what I think about chunking. That I always try to remember that about the chunking. But the most important thing is to just choose one or two and get started. So I have just one additional comment I want to make before we open it up for your suggestions. Maybe you've got some comments of things that have really worked well for you that we'd all love to share. I know I would. Maybe you'll have some questions about some of the things I said. So this is something that I just recently learned that is, I find it very exciting. If you can, just before you go to bed, play as much as you've worked on that day. And, you know, I realize some of you, if you're morning people, when you go to bed, if you're like me, you're kind of ready to just hit the sack. But if you try to plan your time a little bit so you have maybe 10 minutes, just 10 minutes before you go to bed, that you can sit down at your musical instrument and review just a little bit, play through a little bit of what you had worked on that day to memorize. And I know it sounds crazy, but seriously, there has been some research that has shown that the brain automatically rehearses through the night what is done just prior going to bed. I think that's pretty cool. I like to call that effortless practice or playing or memorization. It sounds really good to me. So any tool we can use to supplement all the things that we've tried or other people have suggested, I say let's use as many as we can. And having effortless practice at night before I go to bed, I'm all for that. I have actually even awakened in the morning with the same song going through my head, not knowing that I have had that going through my head all night long, probably. So it works. So now, Dee, if you want to go ahead and open the call up to everyone, we'd love to hear the things that have worked for everyone else, or have you asked some questions?
Okay, the call is open. So if you have a comment, you want to take yourself off mute. And if you're not on mute, it's going to be helpful to use your phone keypad to mute for the quality of the call, or you can do *6 on the keypad. So, do we have any takers?
Yeah, Dee, this is Dallas, Wyoming.
Yep.
Hi, Alice.
Hi. What I find works for me, because I have the same temptation to play through a piece, is I will do my chunking from the end of the piece. And so I'll play the last measure or the last two measures until I have them mastered. And then I'll go and do the last three measures. And I think it accomplishes two things. It prevents you from taking too big a chunks. And it also, since you're going to practice the end of the piece most, you're going to have a very solid conclusion, and I think makes your playing a little bit more secure.
Yeah, Alice, I support that theory 100%. That is a great tool, and it's also posted on the expanded notes that will be posted. So thanks for sharing that. It's good to hear that somebody else has tried that too. It really does work.
Yeah,
thank you so much. Anybody else got a question or a suggestion?
Well, hi, it's Betsy, who now figured out how to take herself off mute. And I just want to thank you because the very first thing you said is probably the most important to me. I always feel like I have to wait, you know, practicing is my reward after I get everything else done, which means I never practice because, as you and Dee know, I never get everything done. So next time I'm going to leave all my laundry and dishes and everything and say it's okay to work on something, even if it's fun. So
yes,
thank you for that permission.
Yeah. You're welcome, Betsy. And just think, you know, if you're leaving those dishes and that laundry to fold behind, once you get through with working on your son's stuff and memorization and playing that tune, you're going to go back and you're going to do those dishes and you're going to get that laundry done. It's going to get it done eventually, but while you're doing that, you're going to be working on that tune in your head. So, you know, why not do that first, right?
Yeah, and I like the idea of right before you go to bed, too. That makes sense to me, and I've never tried it.
Well, let me know. Let me know how it works for you.
I will. Maybe my husband will do a laundry, too.
Good. Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else?
Linda, this is Lily.
Hi.
Hi. So I wanted to say, too, when so you suggested taking the right hand and the left hand separately when you're learning something, and I just wanted to add to that that when you do put them together, slow them down even more because sometimes you get your patterns memorized really well in the right hand and you get the melody going up to tempo, and then you add the left hand and the whole thing falls apart. So the key to that is to kind of, if you're going to add something new, subtract something at the same time. And in this case, I would subtract the tempo, you know, because that's not as important as getting the hands together. And then when you talked about taking breaks, getting up and leaving your instrument, that is so important. It's part of the, I call it digestion process. It's like you're saying you have to chew, you know, slowly. You take small bites and chew slowly. And then when you take the break, it actually gives the brain time to assimilate that information. There's like a digestion period. It's very real so that when you come back to the piece, you're actually playing it better than when you left it because it's had time to assimilate. And I wanted to add a couple more things. One is that you would think that learning the whole song at once would be the fastest way to learn it. But taking it in chunks like that is actually the most efficient, and you actually learn it more quickly. I know because I used to try to memorize whole tunes all the way from childhood until I started taking this course. And so memorizing them this way has been a much quicker, more efficient experience for me to take the chunks rather than the whole tunes. And then I just wanted to add that besides the oral and the kinesthetic and the visual learning, there's also a cognitive process that's going on where we're learning to recognize patterns like chords and things like that. And like you said, if there's a repeat that we've already done the fingering on and that kind of thing, there's a process, a cognitive process that's going on as well. So it's a lot of learning, so we just kind of have to give ourselves space to be able to absorb all of that. So that's my
two cents. Absolutely. Oh.
That's a great presentation. Thank you for covering all those details.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thank you for all the things that you added. I love what you said about the digestion of everything. That's kind of, that's a great word on describing it because that's really what we're doing when we do take those breaks. And it's not only the digesting process, but it's also good for the body to not overtax the body and sit there for an hour trying to memorize a tune that is not coming together and having the frustration and everything. And that's why it seems at the very first, like you said, Lily, that it would seem strange to say that if you break it down and chunk it like this, it would actually be faster. It sounds counterproductive to say do the chunking, but it really does facilitate learning a tune much, much quicker. And once you get kind of a rhythm, and I'm not talking tempo here, but I mean in your own style of developing this pattern of chunking, it's quick in much quicker the more you practice it. So yeah, thanks for all your input, Lily. Gosh, it was great.
Yeah, and I wanted to say too, with the taking breaks, that was still the hardest thing for me. Because I know you just want to keep pushing and pushing, but it's not productive. You can just be banging your head against the wall, like you say. It can be a real challenging, part of a piece, and you can just be frustrated, and that's not a productive way to practice. So you always want to keep in mind, there's a reason they call music playing. So
That's right. And
it's more efficient. So.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I agree. And I like using that word playing rather than practicing. Although that word still comes into my vocabulary frequently. But I really tried to choose that word playing over practicing, because playing initiates that fun response in my head, you know, like you just said, do the playing.
Sweet. All right.
Excellent points. Really mentioned cognitive processing, and I would just add that when you practice in this mode and you begin to do the discovery process and be curious about how a piece is set up and chord patterns and so forth, what I was surprised about is that it transfers to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing that I want to do. Because I think because my brain is engaged in the piece from the get-go, I'm not just having notes come in one eye and out my finger. And so there's a whole thought process, and as I recognize how to make a piece, when I pick up the next piece, I go, well, that's exactly the same thing. It's a 1-5-8. Oh, well, that makes it easier. So, what you do, both in the time that you put in this methodology to develop it, and then as you do additional pieces, it's all building blocks. It does so much more than just give you the memorized piece. And, you know, if you haven't tried it, I'm like Linda. It's like, just pick out one or two things that really resonate with you and try them. A second thing that I want to say is, you know, both Lily and Linda talked about speed, and that you want to do things only as fast as you can do them correctly, and that when you put your hands back together again, the tendency is definitely to think you can go at the same speed you were when you were playing separately. One of the ways to know how fast you can play anything is, as you are in the bathtub, humming the tune to yourself, thinking about, you know, what's first, second. If you're humming the tune at a pace that your brain has not integrated the information, you will get stopped in the mental practice. And that happens, you'll notice particularly where it transitions. Because the brain has to learn not only what it is it needs to do, but it has to look ahead to where you're going. Otherwise, when you get to the end of a section and it hasn't made that bridge, you're sitting there looking for what's next, thinking about it rather than just being able to move into it. So when you're doing mental rehearsals, it's really, really powerful, and it's an indicator of what speed you can even think about practicing at. And it was just astounding to me to discover that if I paid attention to how quickly I could go through a piece and do it smoothly, that indicated where I was in learning the piece, and it told me where my problem points were. There is help.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the temporal can be picked up later as you get the music under your fingers, and you know, using the metronome later on down the line, once you've got the tune memorized, then it can be gradually, very gradually worked up to tempo. But there's, you know, also those times where you may need to take a step back and move the tempo way back, way, way, way back, and start all over again. And that's okay, you know.
And the opposite is true when you're concerned about tempo. The brain can get habituated to how you're playing it, and if you're doing a really good job of playing it where it is, but you want to go faster, and every time you pick up the speed a little bit, you start making mistakes. One of the things you want to do is offer the brain some choices. And I don't advocate practicing faster than you can practice mistakeless. But on the other hand, one of the very handy things to do is quickly take one, you know, do a once through and kind of give yourself permission to make mistakes and say, now I want you to play this as fast as you can. And maybe you do, I want to play this as softly as you can. There are a number of things that you can do. And then you go back and find out how you really can play it at a tempo that you can do it without mistakes. And sometimes that exercise of just doing a run through as fast as you can, not worrying about mistakes, enables you to take a step ahead that you were unable to do beforehand. But I'm with Lily and Linda. Speed comes naturally. It just isn't something to worry about up front. It comes.
That's so true.
Linda?
Yes.
This is Anna Marie in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And I don't know whether you're on your roll call. Hi. This was wonderful, and I want to thank you for all the information. I do have a question about using the metronome when you are first doing the chunking. If you were to, say, take the first three measures, do you ever set a speed at that time as your metronome when you're just getting started so that you have the rhythm correct?
I do not use other people. I'd love to hear what other people have to say about this. Maybe Lily has some input or Dee or Betsy. But me personally, I do not use my metronome when I do the first part of my chunking. I save the metronome for a little bit later. If I am, with one exception, and that is when I have a section that maybe has kind of befuddled me with, maybe it's got a few more eighth notes, maybe a lot of notes in the measure where my brain just kind of goes really into quicks into neutral when I see a lot of notes in one measure. And so then I might pull out the metronome and count it out. But you can do that very easily without the metronome by just tapping it out on your leg or a pencil on the top of your music stand or something like that. And then I would write the timing. If it's like, you know, 1 and 2 and 3, 4, that kind of thing, above the notes, just to give myself a reference point on that. So typically I won't say broadly I never do it, but typically I don't pull my metronome out until I've finished with my memorizing the complete tune.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
What does anybody else have to put?
This is Linda Cookenbrod. This is Linda Cookenbrod. I have to agree with you. If you pull out your metronome, that's a distraction, at least for me, on what I'm trying to learn in the chunks and the bits that I'm working on. You know, once I kind of get a feel for the notes and the melody and do the new review,
then I'll pull out some type of metronome. But I find that it distracts me from what I'm trying to really memorize in the first place. And I'd also like to add, I can't emphasize enough how much practice you get when you're away from your instrument. Once you do your actual playing, I find myself, you know, either in the car or just, you know, like Betsy said, doing the dishes or something, and you're playing in your mind over and over, and then all of a sudden you sort of have an aha moment and then go back to your instrument. It's just an amazing technique. And thanks so much, Linda. It's a wonderful call tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for your sharing.
This is
Lily. Did you have something?
Yes, I did. I'd like to say about the metronome that I never use it up front, and that's just me. I don't want to say no one should ever. But again, like Linda Cook and Broad was saying, it is a distraction. There's a function for the metronome, and it's really there are a couple different things. You can use it for exercises to get to learn how to work with the metronome, because exercises are repetitive. You don't have fingerings that you're working out. You don't have the whole piece coming up. The metronome has a tendency to make the piece seem kind of urgent if you don't have it memorized and down. The place for the metronome is when you are unsure about whether you're speeding up or slowing down. You already maybe have the piece memorized, and there are sections you're just not sure if the count is quite right or the tempo is quite right. That's the time to bring it in, to smooth things out. But at the beginning, it's just not really a good use of the metronome to bring it in.
Excellent.
That's my take. Okay.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Lily. Okay, anybody else?
This is Barry from Ishlady. And
hi.
With regards to the metronome issue, I'm a cellist. I'm one of the rare people that doesn't play the harp, at least yet. And most of my experience is with orchestra music, so it's a little bit different than what it sounds like most other people on the call are doing. But what I've actually found is when I'm learning a piece, the first time when I'm taking the very first look at the notes, I'll play it through really slowly and not even worry about the rhythm. But once I actually start working on putting the notes and the rhythm together, I start with the metronome very slowly, so that I know that as I slowly bump the speed up on the metronome, that I'm still getting everything in the correct rhythm. And I found that helps me quite a bit with learning the pieces and getting them known or getting them smoothed out.
Good. It's good that you found a way to make that work for you. Thanks for sharing, Aaron. Yeah, we don't have much time left. Anybody else?
If there's anybody talking, you're talking to yourself on mute. I can't hear you. Well, Linda, do you have anything that you want to add to wrap up the call?
I'd just like to add, just get started. Just pick one or two of the suggestions and get started. Look for the expanded notes when the recording is posted. And see, there are going to be perhaps a few other things on there that might be able to click for you. Thank you so much. Wish you all a good evening.